Welcome to the Dark Side of Soul podcast. This is Joe.
This is Sean.
We want to welcome you on this lovely day, evening, wherever you are. Here I am doing it. I'm doing the music from the hearts of space.
You listen to that too much. You're plugging for that guy pretty good.
I'm really just... I just want to do that. I want to do that voice with this microphone.
Right.
Just want to just have nice, quiet time with Dark Side of Soul.
Yeah. And it's a lovely, well, if we were the Addams family or the Munsters, it might be lovely. It's windy and rainy and blustery. And
now it's I love this weather. If I'm inside, I love this weather.
Oh, yeah. This is the perfect weather to put on an old... haunted house movie.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought you were segueing into our topic. This is a perfect evening to put on some K-pop.
Is there a perfect? Okay, all right. I'm not going to.
I just love, you know, windy, rainy, relaxing afternoons with K-pop.
Yeah. No, horror movies. I was going to say like the old dark house and... that kind of stuff. Yeah, horror movies. That is our topic, though.
Horror movies with K-pop.
Not horror movies. Not horror movie K-pop. The horrors of K-pop or the superstitions of K-pop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But maybe some introductions first.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just want to say that we also run the Dark Side of Soul Ghost Walk right here in Seoul. You can get more information and book a tour very conveniently at darksideofsoul.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at Dark Side of Soul and join our Facebook page at facebook.com/darksideofsoul, where we regularly host watch parties featuring classic horror films. And if you want to, you could talk to Minji the Ghost, our chat bot, which she's been getting a few people talking to her lately, I've noticed.
Yeah. We've been, things have been kind of getting busier for her.
Yeah, she's been having fun because she's been bored. She's been bored. And every now and then, I mean, on the Facebook page is where we'll post if we're doing coupon codes for the tour as well. Today, we're going to talk about the dark side of the Korean music industry, otherwise known as K-pop, to the uninitiated. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially more recently. I don't remember when I first heard that term, though.
K-pop? I don't know. It must have been the mid-2000s when I came. But it's, we have, I'll plug my other podcast, the Soul Podcast. Mm. It's like Dark Side of Soul without the dark side. it's by the time this comes out, it would already be published. Is I'm talking to Young Kim, who is broadcaster here, but also started out in Korea as a rapper for the K-pop group Sharp in the late 90s. And he was talking about the music industry back then. And I think he said that. It wasn't called K-pop in the 90s. It was called, I think it was Gayu, he said.
Gayu. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, well, K-pop, of course, is just a marketing term. There's the people say it's a genre. It's not I argue pretty hard against it being a genre.
You know who else does that? It is the Korean of Ask the Korean. He argues it's not a genre.
Yeah, it's not.
No. He does. I think it's John Dunbar. Of the Korea Times.
Oh, okay. Well, John
Dunbar.
John's the punk rock guy, so
yeah,
it doesn't. That's another thing we could talk about at some point. Not so many superstitions in punk rock, but Korea has a great underground music scene.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know. It's not just the fluffy. It's not just K-pop. Yeah. I shouldn't talk down about K-pop because I secretly have some songs on my playlist.
Recent ones?
Yeah, actually, I have a 9-year-old daughter. How can I not be exposed? And to hear her sing, the song gets into my head, and I'm like, okay,
Yeah.
You know, I get into it. I'm not as much of a snob as I used to be. I was such a music snob, especially in high school. Right. In fact, I didn't like any music that was ever played on the radio. I actually created a club called the Organization Against Top 40.
Nice.
We had a newsletter and everything. This is news. This is the late 80s, early 90s. So I had to go to the computer lab and use these newfangled inkjet printers. And I had so much fun because you could play with fonts.
Right.
Oh, they were ugly newsletters. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. 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 I used to be one of the moderators on a site called Radiomute.com. Uh-huh. I think you can guess with that name, Radio Mute. It was ideally that all the members were, well, not ideally, but generally it attracted people who didn't like top 40 music, who didn't like the radio.
I was of a group of listeners that said that Nirvana was too mainstream.
Well, they were after Bleach.
Yeah.
Once Smells Like Teen Spirit came out.
Yeah.
I'd say they kind of, and that's why I think when they did Bleach and then Nevermind and In Utero, In Utero got sent back. The company, I can't remember, I'm kind of blanking on the whole story, but the record company was like, what is this? They're like, that's music, man. And by the time Nirvana was done, when Kurt Cobain killed himself, or did he? But by the time Kurt Cobain was dead, grunge turned into a decaffeinated version of itself. Soul
That's
asylum.
A good word, decaffeinated. Yeah,
yeah.
Soul asylum. Hey, it got Winona Ryder to date you. It's fine with me.
And their song "Runaway Train," they found a lot of missing children. And we just did our episode a couple weeks ago for us now.
Oh,
missing kids, and that music video. If no one knows, it's Soul Asylum, Runaway Train, and it's about missing children.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed kids in the music video, and a bunch of kids got
missing
found
children. Missing children in the music video. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and they got found. Yeah.
And lead singer dated Winona Ryder.
It was, is that right? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
But now I'm jealous because I had a pretty big crush on Winona Ryder back
then. So do I. Still do.
She was great in Stranger Things.
Yes.
And Dracula.
Lucky Sean
Bram Stoker's Astin. Dracula. Yeah. Yeah. Dated Sean Astin. Goonies.
No, Sean Astin was her love interest in season 2 of Stranger Things.
Yeah, right. And then he's got he's in Goonies.
He's in Goonies and
Lord of the Rings films. So anyway, we're getting Rudy. A little bit off. And Rudy, it's a great movie. Here, Joe and I are walking down memory lane to the 80s and in the,
he's
in the 90s.
He's a voice on the Minecraft story series on Netflix, along with Patton Oswalt.
Oh, I love Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, me too. It's the Minecraft thing is produced by Patton Oswalt, and my daughter loves it. I've tried to get into it because I like Minecraft, but that's Anyway,
yeah,
we're going on K-pop, and
we are going to talk about K-pop.
You know what it is? Yeah. I think we're just dancing around this so much because we're just a little nervous about. It's like let's dip our toe in and see what the temperature is like.
Right.
Really want to get into this.
Yeah. Like, cause I think, cause this is a, I think talking about the dark side of the K-pop industry. Yeah. Like you said, be a little bit, I think we're not actually dancing around it. We're just kind of maybe testing the water, it's a sensitive issue. Yeah.
I do. And that's what I was bringing up my credentials before. It's like, I'm not in that stage anymore. I've opened my mind way much more about music now. I mean, that's still crap music is crap music, but you still occasionally you can still find stuff that has more lasting power than cotton candy on your tongue.
Yeah. But bands today that I listen to, Devil's Witches, Mind Cult, Potion, Haunted. That's all the doom. It's spooky. Like it's thematic.
They all sound like Stephen King novels.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they're all horror themed. So they have song titles like Howling Witch and Drink My Blood and stuff like that. So I love it. And I often have a playlist on my phone when I'm heading into Seoul to do a Dark Side of Seoul tour. Mm-hmm. That's what I listen to on the way in.
Oh my.
That's what gets me in the mood to do the tour, listening to this supernatural themed, horror themed doom metal. So wow. That for anyone who's been on the tour before or planning to come on the tour at some point in the future, that's what I was doing before the tour started.
The state that Sean is in. He's not listening to K-pop.
I'm not.
Which we're still skirting around the topic.
We will get to it. I think it's good for us to talk a little bit the truth that we both really love music. We're both connoisseurs of music, I think. Like, we love it. It's a big part of, I think, of what we do.
Yeah, I started out as a music. I started out as a music major. Yeah.
There you go. So we're not just talking about K-pop here as someone. People on the sides, like, you know, it's just.
Kids these days.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. None of that kind of nonsense. We genuinely love music. So we will talk a little bit about the industry, but we have some of the superstitions of K-pop that we're going to talk a little bit about.
Right.
And ghost stories.
Mm.
I remember when I first came to Korea, this is why I asked you earlier. So when did that term K-pop start being used? Because when I came to Korea 20 years ago, I don't remember it being used. And BoA was the big K-pop.
BoA. Star. Yeah, she was, I think she was finishing her peak when I came in 2004.
Okay. And she was like 12 or something when she hit it big.
I think a friend of mine was her English teacher.
Oh, is that right? Didn't she release? She released English albums as well, right? Yeah. BoA was the big name. HOT, GOD was huge. I remember these are the old bands that
GOD.
when I first came to Korea. I remember people talking about the things that some of these K-pop idols, the stars, the icons, they believed in. One thing I thought was really funny was that a lot of them believed that the title that they'd either give their a song or an album could influence their success or failure in the future for either that song or their career in general.
Uh-huh.
So I remember there was the band Baby Vox. They were big in the late 90s. They were really big when I first came to Korea as well in 2000. Mm-hmm. And apparently their first album failed. No, I can't. It had something to do with the name of a song, or that's what they chalked it up to. It had nothing to do with piss poor marketing or just crappy music, or they just weren't any damn good. They blamed it on the name of the album or a song.
Yeah.
But then one of their follow-up albums had a song on it called Killer. And I remember that because all the kids, because I was teaching little kids at the time when I first came to Korea. And the kids would come in and they'd be singing this song. And then it was said that they were successful with that album because that song was called Killer and they were killing their competition. So they literally believe that the titles of the songs and whatnot, this superstition existed within the industry, that they would influence their future failure or success based on titles. But of course it was always in retrospect, because if that was fully believed, you'd name everything. Every song would be, I'm going to go to number one.
Yeah.
This album's going to be top 10. I'm going to make a million, you know? So it was always in retrospect where they had these beliefs. So, but you know, that's the whole point of a superstition. You always kind of look back on things and like, oh, see, there's the titles were pretty big thing at the time. I'm not really sure if that's a thing still today within the industry, but it was before anyway.
I'm just trying to think of what the significance of the song Peekaboo.
I don't know
that came out like 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago. My daughter was singing it today.
Okay. Yeah. Sing it for us, Joe. Give us a few minutes.
No.
Are we gonna finish the episode without doing a bit of K-pop each?
I can get Gian to sing.
I still remember like certain lines of songs. Songs that I hate. God, I can't stand when I hear these songs on the bus or something. There's that one song that just drives me crazy. Uh-huh. It's a wee ade.
Okay.
Like we ade up and down.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Wee ade.
Ade. Okay. That.
Yeah, I don't know who sings it, but I hear it on the bus all the time. So I was like, okay, time to put on some doom metal and put my earphones in. So I know lines. Oh, what was the other one? Sorry.
Yeah.
So I remember certain lines like that from songs because they write them on purpose to bore into your head, so you can't get them out.
Yeah.
And Wayne's World, they called that the Manilow complex. When the first song you hear in the morning is the song that's in your head for the rest of the day. It doesn't matter if you like it or not.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
So they're like when you wake up and you hear Mandy by Barry Manilow, you can't get it out of your head. So Wayne's World, they call it the Manilow complex. So, so there are things like that. The titles of the songs was a big thing. Another thing that was interesting that I found really, this is within more the realm of what we're kind of interested in, especially when we lead our tours. And I used to share this on the tour, and sometimes I still will. If I get people on the tour who I know are K-pop fans, mm-hmm. it's the idea of, they call it the Horror November, Horror Shipilwar. So Horror November, meaning that it's believed some strange events, including deaths within the industry, occur in November.
Oh my.
And a lot of weird things have allegedly happened. Well, no, things did happen. For example, a band would fail. If they released an album in November, the album failed. I guess the title didn't matter in that case. Doesn't matter if the title was, mm-hmm. we're going to number one. If it was released in November, they're like, see, we released it in November. So it failed. A lot of other things, people died. There was deaths of certain Korean music idols, like in the 90s, that seem to be the foundation of this particular superstition.
Mm-hmm.
But some of it kind of goes in the dark way, not for what's being done by or to the K-pop stars, but by the fans,
mm-hmm.
and society in general. There were several arrests for busted for drug use in November. They were arrested. They had to apologize and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they kind of became symbols, you know, the outsiders within the industry. And unfortunately, because, you know, that's dark to me, because if people have a drug problem, they really need help. They need assistance. They don't need fans pissing all over them,
right?
And society pissing all over them and putting them to jail. Number one, the stress that they go through. If we're gonna kind of get into the problems with the industry, within the core of the industry, the stress that these poor people have to go through. A lot of them probably resorted to drug use, which is a normal thing in Western music.
You have to be squeaky clean here and graduate at university.
Right, exactly. Let's see. Exactly. And then,
you have to come from an SKY. And,
right, exactly.
Before you that's your street cred as a rapper.
Yeah. right. That's your street cred. Let's see. So one was a TV personality, Lee Yoon-ji. She was addicted to propofol. Oh, that's pretty nasty. That's a nasty drug. That knocks you out, right? It's often used as a date rape drug, isn't it?
So people were addicted to these. I've seen that. I've seen that before. I'm not a pharmacist, but I play one on TV.
So yeah, so it looks like most of the people that I'm, the names that I'm finding are actresses. Lee Seung-yeon, Park Si-hyun, Jang Mi-ne. So they were all addicted to the drug, and they had to apologize, and it was terrible, the whole thing. And I think that kind of, to me, like, they should have been given more sympathy and help, I think.
Yeah, in hindsight, but I mean, the stigma is still strong here about
abuse. I know. Yeah, and there's nothing I can do about that, of course, but it's me hoping out loud, I think, that things kind of change. But there were a few...
we don't do drugs, Sean.
The only drugs I do is booze. That's the only...
I don't even do that now.
Yeah, I do. I don't have my whiskey or my scotch poured tonight. We're recording a little bit earlier tonight, earlier than usual. So I guess I didn't pour up.
We're going before Sean's cocktail hour.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, but there are a few ghostly things within the K-pop industry. Joe, something you share on your tour.
Yeah, we mentioned a lot on the tour about the ghost at Gwangnam-do Station. Mm-hmm. Supposedly it was there's a murder of a young woman, and I think it's 1960, by her cousin, who confessed his love to her, and she went like, ew, gross. And even though that is the subplot of Arrested Development, but he got angry, shoved her, she smashed her head up against the rocks and died. And so people say these days you can see her ghost in the driver's cab of the subway train as it passes through Gwangnam-do Station. And it's also supposedly seen in a music video that was filmed there. And people keep asking me, which one is it? And I don't tell, but I'll tell you here. It is Lee Seung-hwan, a video called Ewon, which I think translates to appeal. And it's very, very brief that you see it. We're not going to tell you where it is, but I'll just tell you this. You have to look for the driver's cab. So you have to look for when you see the front of the train. And subway train. And you have to really pause to catch it. You have to really be fast to catch it. I don't see how people found this out, really.
Yeah.
The whole music video takes place at Gwangnam-do Station. It looks like it's the subway song, man.
Yeah.
He was angsty that his girlfriend is riding the subway.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he was a huge, huge name back in the 90s. I remember asking
about people. He's got glasses. He's the guy. He's the singer with glasses.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Bruce Coburn?
Just saying. He's the crooner with the glasses.
The crooner with glasses. But I remember hearing about that too, pretty early, not long after I arrived in Korea. They're like, there's a ghost. There's a music video with a ghost. And I was like, well, hook me up. Show me this video. YouTube didn't exist yet. So I probably didn't see it. Oof. I don't know how long, a year or more after I had heard about it.
It's also been said that EXO is kind of not really cursed, but they're haunted. And
oh, really?
Ghosts tend to appear in their videos.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And then their selfies and things like that.
Really? That's interesting. I never heard of that.
Yeah,
a lot of these interesting things. I don't know. Are they one of the bands that allegedly has a sound recording of a ghost?
Yeah. So there's in EXO, there is a strange voice that appears. In one of the videos, there's a strange voice.
Interesting. Yeah, I've heard of that before. And that's supposed to be auspicious, though, right? That's supposed to indicate good luck, right?
For the players. So if you're making an album or coming out with an album and you're visited by a ghost, or if a ghost is involved, and if you have some type of close encounter of the ghost kind. I was trying to think of a pun.
The ghostly kind.
That means that your new album will be successful.
Yeah.
One example was a member of Miss A. She was having a what's it called when you have those vivid dreams, you feel like when you're awake but you can't move your body.
You're like night terrors?
No, it's not night terror.
Lucid dreaming?
No, it's not lucid dreaming. Sleep paralysis. Mm-hmm. You wake up and you can't move your body because your body's still asleep. Yeah, so remember Miss A, she had that, and a ghost visited her while she was in sleep paralysis. And she talked about it, and her fans are like, oh, that means your album's going to be successful.
She's like, well, I hope so, because that scared the crap out of me.
Yeah, that's sleep paralysis with the ghost encounter. You don't want that.
Yeah.
Sleep paralysis is the worst.
But anyway, so that's supposed to be a good thing for people within the K-pop industry, getting ghost recordings on your songs.
There's lots of cases. All you got to do is type K-pop ghost, and you got all these stories of fans seeing ghosts on pictures of K-pop idols. This is Teen Top has another one.
We were chatting a bit earlier about that. In the mirror or the window, it looks like a face. It looks like an old woman, peeking in the mirror.
Keep in mind that when people are getting pictures or there's a video being done, there's actually someone like behind the camera and there's a camera there.
That's right.
And sometimes their reflection ends up in the thing.
Right. And there might be photos of people on the wall that are being reflected.
Yeah, I do that too. Is this a habit of mine? Is when I'm watching anything that has a mirror or any reflective surface, a window, a chrome handrail, I'm always looking for the camera.
Right.
In the reflection.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a lot of the really fun, superstitious, supernatural based things that are related to the K-pop industry. But there's certainly a real dark side to the industry. And that's all the scandals.
Right.
Not just money scandals and white collar scandals. We're talking pretty bad sex scandals, sex favors for success.
Yeah.
And the big one was the Burning Sun scandal last year.
Yeah. That was big. Involves It was a club. Never mind. It was a nightclub.
In Gangnam, called Burning Sun.
Seungri was a member of Big Bang. Is it Big Bang?
Big Bang.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Big Bang. Yeah.
He was a part owner. He was involved in this nightclub. Yeah, and there was regular people drugging young women there and raping them there.
And filming it, and then there were
chat rooms of them with other people in the industry, also members of boy bands, and they were sharing these acts, the videos of these acts with them.
Yeah,
just it was disgusting. It was okay. I'm being judgmental. Well, judgmental. I mean, one thing, horrible acts, but also just immature. As in, you're in your late 20s, early 30s, and you're like, it sounds like 15-year-old locker room talk.
Yeah.
Except with video.
Right.
Yeah, it's just.
Yeah, that was terrible, and that kind of
emotionally stunted. It sounded like.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So that definitely shook the industry. The thing that struck me though, and this is one of the issues that I have with the K-pop industry outside of the corporate structure of it, of it being maintained, cookie cutter, has to be so in such and such a way. And there's the certain level within the fan base that's very rabid, and they supported
for Americans. It's pronounced rabid, but yeah.
Okay. It's very, yeah. Like there was support. There was still support for Sun Li after that among the families. Oh
God. Yeah.
And that see, to me, that indicates that your idolization of these social elites has gotten so bad, has gone so far that it's removed your intellect. You become intellectually and emotionally bankrupt if you can still support someone after that. And like, oh no. And that's like the things that have happened in the past in Korea with serial killers, men or rapists, where the judge says in the case, he was drunk. Boys will be boys. All that awful, terrible excuse, those excuses for deplorable behavior. Mm-hmm. There is this section of the K-pop fan base that feels that way, even if it goes against other things they support, like the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how, for example, someone could be in support of something like the Me Too movement, which is absolutely necessary and very, very important. And when it came to Korea, it was wonderful. And I had the pleasure of leading the tour, a hiking tour and a dark side tour, with a woman named Professor Jennifer Piscopo from California. And she was invited to Korea to discuss women's rights and the Me Too movement in Korea. She was a wonderful person to do the tours with. And we spoke on so many different issues. All those things happened at that time. So I don't understand how you could be in support of things like that, like Me Too, but then still support someone like Sun Li.
Yeah,
you can't. Like, there's a disconnect. You can't. You're inherently, morally, not allowed to do that. That's just, you can't. Yeah. So that's where I love the expression. I don't hate the band, just their fans.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, Sloan, Canadian band Sloan, has a song with that lyric in it.
Ah.
So,
they're talking about religion.
And then religion, yeah. There's really, I don't hate God, only his fans, yeah. So yeah. To me, that's the really unsavory underbelly of K-pop. The corporate aspect that gives these people the idea that they have the right to do these things, like the Burning Sun scandal, yeah. And then the fan base who will still support their idols in no matter what kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I get turned off from the industry itself.
Yeah.
So, and then there's things like the body image yeah. controls,
and that's funny,
the slave contracts.
Some of my favorite woman stars, idols, tend to defy the body image of K-pop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My favorites.
Do you remember the K-pop band years ago now? They were called Big Mama.
I think so.
They had one hit. They were kind of a one-hit wonder, I think. But their song was excellent, and they were fantastic singers. And their music was more along the lines of late 60s R&B, not modern or 90s R&B. It was more like late 60s.
Uh-huh.
Production values were a little bit too high for me, a little bit squeaky clean, but all around they were fantastic, so talented. They were so good. And they were all what would be considered large. They were large women.
Mm-hmm.
And the video showed four women, really thin, the concept
of what's
acceptable by society.
Yeah.
And they're on stage, and then the video switches now and again, and you see the actual band, the four women,
yeah,
who are not within, they don't fit within the the social confines of what's beautiful.
Yeah.
And they're singing. And then the video finishes and everyone applauds for these four women who are on stage who are lip syncing, and they leave. And then the band in the back, they just walk away. They don't get any of the praise.
Yeah.
So there's a commentary. That was years and years ago.
I remember that. That was good. That was a good video.
Yeah, it was big. Sorry, I don't remember that because that just popped in my head. I'm not remembering the name of the song.
But that sounds like the Weather Girls were kind of that way too, in America.
Right, right.
Later on, have you ever heard, later used in Everybody Dance Now, that's the Weather Girls.
Yeah.
But it was credited to someone else on the video.
Is it? Oh, in the video. Okay.
If you watch the video, it's lip synced by someone who's not the Weather Girls.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the body image thing, I think that's a dark side of the industry for K-pop. And then a lot of people say things that broken philosophical argument, the fallacy, where it's like, but it happens in the West as well. It's like, yes, of course, we know
it doesn't make it
so it's broader. It's a broader mistake that's being made, so it's okay. It's a broader way of
I'm of the argument that it makes it lowers Korea's standing. It lowers Korea's status by saying it's okay if others do it, especially if the West does it, because that means that Korea's the little brother that is allowed. Oh, if you do it, it's okay. If you're morally corrupt, it's okay for me to be morally corrupt because you're my big brother.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so it puts Korea in a lower status by saying that because the West is doing it, it's okay for Korea to do it.
Yeah. It's a fallacy. Philosophically it's illogical to make that argument.
Yeah, Korea should be a leader, not a follower in this.
That's right. Yeah. So so all these different things. I remember, now this is a long time. This must be around 2010. There was a study done maybe by the Jungan Ilbo, which is a newspaper here in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And their study found that roughly 60% of K-pop women, performers, idols, who wanted to transition into film did so through providing sexual favors.
Mm.
That was 10 years ago. I'm pretty sure that was around 2010, maybe 2011.
A lot of the suicides have happened because of stuff like that, too.
That's right. There was the three big suicides several months ago.
And they were revealing like what was going on in the industry and how they felt about the sexual favors. Yeah.
That's right. So it's terrible things.
Don't let your daughters grow up to be K-pop singers.
There you go. So to me, all the Harvey Weinstein kind of thing that's happening, that's revealing how corrupt and disgusting Hollywood is, the Hollywood elites are. With Korea has the exact same problem,
barely especially with getting the attention that America's getting.
Yeah.
We're going to need a few large, unfortunately, we'll need a few much larger scandals before anyone does anything serious about this.
Yeah.
I mean, who remembers? Burning Sun was a year ago and no one remembers it now. Really. It's not talked about anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What ended up happening? I do remember, this is something that annoyed me. It may have just been the language used, but those guys maybe, I know Sung Lee went to jail, I'm sure. But I remember the news in English anyway. I didn't read any Korean language papers at the time about the scandal, but they were saying things like Sung Lee has retired from the entertainment industry. It's like, retired? Why give him the benefit of that word? Retirement is a choice. He had to be, the language and the actuality of the situation should have been so that he had his ass hauled out of the industry and thrown in jail.
Yeah.
So
Harvey Weinstein's retired from the industry.
Right. Yeah. Harvey Weinstein's retired from producing films. It doesn't fly, right? It doesn't sound right. So they still gave these men
the agency. Benefit of,
gave them the benefit of the language. So horrible. So And the more I talk about this kind of topic, the angrier I get. So
okay, well, let's move on. Let's wrap things up because we've been talking a good bit. We've had a few smaller scandals too. I remember that are kind of like things that get blown. That's the thing is like things like this get brushed under the rug a lot, and then smaller things get really blown up.
Right.
I mean, relatively smaller things. They're not.
Burning Sun was probably pretty big. Yeah. A lot of things are small in comparison. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
T.O.P. getting busted for marijuana. I remember that.
Oh, God. Yeah. T.O.P. What band is he in? Is he also Big Bang?
Any
K-pop fan?
Yeah. Okay. This is the thing is I'm so bad as I get Big Bang and Super Junior mixed up all the time, even though I've actually hung out with Super Junior.
Isn't Super Junior like 12 or 15 people?
Yeah,
or
yeah. I was on a TV show with them a while back,
okay,
a long time ago. Mm. And they were fun. They were cool guys. But that's so bad of me is that I still mix up Big Bang. It's Big Bang. Yeah, top and G Dragon are Big Bang.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Is just typical. He's just going to LA and did what kids in LA do, and the kids in LA do, and came back. And now, when you see young Korean men return from America with a shaved head, it's because they're trying to avoid getting busted for weed.
Is that right?
Yeah, so they can't get a hair sample.
Oh. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, that whole thing was so overblown. And I do understand, though, we're looking at it from the perspective of North Americans.
Yeah.
Joe being American, I'm Canadian. And now weed is legal in Canada. So, and in parts of the United States. Is that right? California, maybe it's legal?
Oh, yeah. Well, recreational, lots of the states. Colorado, where my girls were just in Colorado a few months ago. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it's funny that my wife, because my wife is one of those people who would go like, oh, it's a scandal. He got busted for the marijuana.
the weeds.
And she was just spending a whole month in a state where it's legalized.
Right, right. This is the joke in Canada now. It's like when the mailman comes to your door, it's like your dealer's here because it's delivered through the post. It can be. It's because it just comes from the government. It's delivered by the government.
I thought you were going to say your father's here.
Oh. That's a different episode, Joe. but yeah, that was so overblown. But anyway, like us viewing it in the as being North Americans, where smoking up is culturally fine. It's now legally fine in all of Canada. Most of the states are a lot.
Also, just how squeaky clean.
It's such a non-issue.
It's AAA, squeaky clean. It has to be an image of squeaky clean, which is why they go underground and they repress all of these urges and they.
That's right.
It comes out as demons.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, and the thing that when that happened, I was like, the first thing I thought was, oh, that's awesome. Now I hope he doesn't apologize. And the next day he gave his teary apology. And I was like, man, see, if he was outside of the confines of the K-pop industry, I have a feeling he wouldn't have apologized. He's like, shag it. He's like, yeah, I did it. He's like, it's fine. There's no difference in smoking weed. There's no difference from smoking weed and going and having three or four bottles of soju at a Galbi restaurant. Mm-hmm. Before going home in the middle of the week. Mm-hmm. You know, weed, you're going to want to do it at home anyway, because you're going to get sleepy and you want to order a pizza. You're going to get, you need your munchies. So yeah, I was like, if he was outside the confines of the industry, I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have apologized. I was like, I'm hoping he'll become kind of the leader in removing the stigma of it. But no, he gave his apology. He was told by his managers, told by the industry, whichever production company Big Bang is under, he had to apologize.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And there was
heroin
also
changes companies anyway. So,
yeah. Okay. And another one that I thought was a little bit funny, it turned into a scandal, was IU.
Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful singer. Don't really like her music too much, but she's got a beautiful voice. She made a song, where she used a famous children's storybook author. I can't remember the character. And I don't remember which one it was, but she took this character and
Tell me it's Dooley. That sounds like a bad one.
Yeah, and she used the character in a song as a metaphor for masturbation. And people lost their minds. It's like, who cares? It's like, has no one heard She Bop by Cyndi Lauper?
Well, they have in Korea because it was remade into a different song.
There you go. Oppa. Yeah. And of course, there you go. Yeah. Oh, Oppa. That's right. But there was one singer in the early 2000s, Park Ji-yoon, I think her name might be. I'd have to look it up. But she has a song called Namja, and she sang I'm a Man. And I was told that's a metaphor for she's lost her virginity.
Oh,
that's what the song's about losing her virginity. So now people might counter that and say no, it's about this and this, but that's what I was told by several people when that song was popular. So it's not unusual for Koreans to release songs that are about sex, that have commentary about sex. Have you seen how some of them perform? They're obviously either singing about sex or they're sexing up their performances.
Gayeen from Brown Eyed Girl, her first solo song was all about masturbation.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So I guess I use things that she used a children's character as the metaphor for masturbation. So
Dooley, please let it be Dooley, because that just sounds right.
But the IU had to apologize. She had to come out and she had to apologize for it. Yeah. So a lot of those non-scandals, pseudo-scandals.
I want to just mention in the comments, wherever you listen to us, if you're doing it through, if you're listening to us, downloading us on iTunes, or I think it's called Apple Podcast now, or if you're doing it on Spotify, Stitcher, you can also go to our website, Dark Side of Soul Podcasts. darksideofsoul.com/podcast, and just leave comments, or actually even better, our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Easy way to do it. Active group. And talk to us more about your stories, about what you've heard about K-pop superstitions, ghost stories happening in K-pop, the dark side of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your thoughts on anything that we talked about today.
Yeah.
So Joe, okay. Before we go, name a Korean singer that you do like.
I got four.
Okay.
I do like, I mentioned people who don't fit the body type. I like CL.
Mm-hmm.
From formerly of 2NE1, 21. I like her a lot.
Yeah.
I like her. Well, I love 21 in general.
I know that band, but I don't know. I don't know CL.
Yeah. Gayeen from Brown Eyed Girl. Just that song. Okay, that I'll admit, Abracadabra is on my playlist, and I still listen to that. It's a fun song. It's written by two people. It's funny because half the song is written by one person, half the song is written by another person. They're both electronic music artists. They're DJs and electronic music artists. There's stuff that goes on in that song, and that music video is still the most erotic. If you watch the full version of it, it's the most erotic K-pop video I've ever seen. Of course, Ishuri, because it's
Ishuri, right.
Got it. It's Ishuri. Right, yeah, and Insuni.
Okay, yeah.
She was big in the 80s, then she made a comeback when I first came to Korea. That's how I know her. She was on Cho PD's rap, Chinguyo, and she sang the chorus of that.
I remember that song.
Insuni. Love her.
I'll mention four bands as well. I think without question, Korea's most important singer-songwriter, and probably the most important person in Korean music industry history, is Kim Kwang-suk.
Mm-hmm.
And he's often called like Korea's Bob Dylan or Korea's Neil Young. He came out in the late 80s. excellent, excellent guitarist, beautiful singer. Has a bit of a very light voice, but now and again he can get it raspy. He can do the Neil Young, Bob Dylan kind of thing.
The older stuff is very appealing. I really need to be in like an old bar listening to this stuff on an LP bar. Right. I think Robiseo.blogspot.com. I think that's his blog. I think he goes into this. He's one of the closest we get to like a old Korean music blogger right now. He's got a good.
Yeah. Well, Kim Kwang-suk had his, like, he was part of the zeitgeist when Korea was kind of suffering in those early few years of democracy. Mm-hmm. He understood what Koreans were feeling. And he has a lot of songs like Irana, Stand Up.
Irana, Get Up. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably my favorite.
Get Up and Stand Up are kind of the same word in Korean, aren't they?
Yeah, Irana, Get Up. Irana also mean like wake up.
If you're going to do Bob Marley, be Irana, Irana.
Yeah, right. There we go. Yeah, doing some music. Namu, Tree.
Tree.
It's probably my favorite Kim Kwang-suk song.
Namu.
No, not Namu.
Not herbs.
Joe thinking food again. Namu. And then my wife's favorite band is called Jayurim. And they were a big
Frida,
band.
Free Jayurim. Okay.
I don't know if it could be Jayu, Freedom. Uh-huh. I'm not sure actually. Yeah, fronted by a beautiful singer, a woman, don't remember her name, and she definitely my wife's favorite band. They have a great song called An Young Mimi, Hello Mimi, beautiful song. Sanodim, Korea's first real fuzz rock band, debuted in 1977.
Who is it? Cherry Filter. Mm-hmm. Nangman Koyangi. Mm. Romantic Cat. Yeah, I love that song. Anyway, that's on my list.
So Sanodim, Mountain Echo, can be translated as. They have some of their songs are really like lyrically a little bit silly. That one song called Kitaro Otobayotaja, which is like let's ride a guitar like a motorcycle. A lot of great songs by them. They broke up unfortunately because the drummer, it was a three brothers, it was a trio, three brothers. The drummer brother was killed in Vancouver in a car accident.
Like Hanson.
Hanson drummer.
Okay.
And that was three, right? And then what was my fourth one? What was I going to say? Jayurim. Oh, and I was going to say Say Sumi, which is a contemporary Say Sumi.
Sumi.
Say it again. They're an excellent indie rock band from Busan. They're hitting it big in parts of Western Europe and parts of North America. They're not hitting it big in Korea because Korea is... If you go, you know, they'll play the underground scene in like Hongdae and places
see,
like that.
See, there are different scenes here. Because I call a lot of the mainstream K-pop that you hear around the world is Gangnam K-pop.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a Hongdae scene as well. And I didn't make this up. I actually got this from a K-pop website, K-pop blog. Mm. Is one of the writers distinguished? There's a Gangnam style and there's a Hongdae style of K-pop. And the Hongdae, I associated with a lot of like this bossa nova type of the lazy guitar, you know, lazing out in the sun type of music. You know that song Americano, that's the Hongdae style.
Right. Yeah.
I love it. And who's the band that does that? Oh my God, I can't remember names.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah,
I like that band. That's a good band. Yeah. Mm.
They
actually play instruments.
There used to be Hongdae used to have a really good punk venue called Skunk Hell. I was in the basement. It was dirty and sweaty and bloody. It was great. And then Funky Funky, which is now, it's been called FF for a long time, just turned into a dance club. But it was a live. Oh, they might still do live music. I don't know.
Back in the day, man.
A friend of mine, Ian White, is in a band called Swan Eater. And they're a bit of a hardcore band. Anyway, yeah. So that was a good conversation. I mean, there's some bands that everyone that we just mentioned you can look into if you've never heard of them before.
Yes, thank you so much for sticking around with us through these old farts talking about K-pop.
Talking about you kids and your music.
I feel like but we do find it interesting, and we do admit that we are we're not the typical K-pop fans, but we do we do appreciate it. We do appreciate it. But I want to point out that we also appreciate if you come and join us on the Dark Side of Soul Ghost Walk, Dark Side of Soul Square, at darksideofsoul.com. Remind you that our music is from Soraksan, Soraksan. You can get his music. Where can you get his music? I found it on
Bandcamp. Yeah, Jeju Digital is the. Yeah, Jeju Digital, Jeju like Jeju Island, Jeju-do. Jeju Digital is the label name.
Ah, okay, good. This is my type of music. I like, and it's funny because it is kind of like it's Korean music, but done in ambient style, electronic style. Thank you for our patrons from our Patreon. Thank you to our top patrons: Angel Earl, Joel Bonamini. He's not correcting me yet.
I don't think he's gonna. He's like, no, it's gonna be a running joke for a
nominee. Sorry, man. I'm such a Jamie Staley, Sharon Cullen, all of our buds. If you want, you can be one too.
Yes,
that's a line that Tom's from Tom's Pizza says. He's like, I love my customers, and you can be one too. join.
We love our listeners, and you can be one too.
We have links to our Patreon in our show notes, or just search for Dark Side of Soul on Patreon. For just $5, you can get like so much stuff, extra stuff, between from $5 to $20 a month. And it's very fun. I just heard that Angel received her loot, not the guitar, LOOT, that we sent out our first month's loot. That our top tier patrons get is they get a little something in the mail every month, something horror themed. We got music from Soraksan. We got Shonda special weird tales, little tales. And you also get these episodes early. And we might just start just posting just uncut versions of these as soon as we record them. Oh boy!
For Patreon only.
For Patreon only. Yeah. If you're really into that and just be part of our group. And also for our top tier patrons, we did this recently too. We did a hangout online, and we just hung out on a Friday night online. Great social distancing. Good time. Mm-hmm.
Going to plan the next one soon.
Yeah, we do.
In a couple of weeks. Yeah.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you, Sean. It's been a good evening. Joe. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good time.
Everyone, stay spooky.
Good night.